Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Chris, is it full panic time if the Cavs lose tonight?
No, I don't think so. I think it would be full panic time if the series started in Cleveland and the Cavs lost two at home.
Sure.
But the fact that they started on the road against Boston, and if they were to lose two, and I'm not saying that they're going to lose tonight, but if they were, that's not something that is that big of a deal, because they can come home, take care of business at home, make the adjustments that they need to, and then suddenly the complexion of the series changes.
Jason said this morning he was comfortable in thinking that the Cavs could win one in Boston, which is what they have to do, but winning two would be a challenge. Would you agree with that?
Well, no team's been able to do it so far in the postseason. Well,
that's why.
And I know Philadelphia doesn't have LeBron, and Milwaukee certainly doesn't have LeBron, but Boston is a completely different team at home than they are on the road. So I think it would be a really tough ask for the Cavs to win two in Boston. If there's somebody to do it, it's LeBron. The moment's not going to be too big for him. The atmosphere is not going to be too much for him. He relishes making big-time plays and having big-time performances, especially on the road. He has talked about that throughout the course of his career. But they're a very, very good team at home, and it gets really loud in there, and communication becomes tougher, and like all those different things. And they're young players. They feed off that crowd. So I think getting one is probably the way that the Cavs have to approach this.
Chris, is Tristan definitely starting today?
Yeah, I don't know that it's definite. Ty is not going to reveal his plan. He never wants to. But I think based on what happened in Game 1 and what Ty said in between Game 1 and Game 2, that's a logical conclusion to come to, and I think it's a smart move. And I think Ty, between the two series, I think he was thinking about this and wondering, is this the right thing to do? Because they know how good Tristan Thompson is against Al Horford. They know that if they put a bigger front line out there with Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson, that makes Kevin more comfortable. Maybe the Cavs can take an advantage on the rebounding. Maybe they can get some second chance opportunities, which are a must against Boston's stingy defense. And I think he was considering it going into the series. But I think Ty's the kind of guy who needs to see something not work before he actually makes that adjustment. And I'm not saying that's the right approach to take, but that's how his history has shown him to process these sorts of things. And he didn't want to make a change, I don't think, until he felt like it was time to make a change.
Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com. And Chris, I was talking a lot about this, and I was very critical of your exact point there for Ty Lue. And this is why, to me, Brad Stevens showed you he's a much better coach than Ty Lue. See, the Celtics were having the same great success that the Cavs did, right? Mm-hmm. They've only played one more game in this postseason than the Cavs have. They dominated a Philadelphia team that most of us thought would dominate them. And they were doing it with Aaron Baines in the starting lineup. But in this series, he decided, not waiting for a loss, not saying, oh, well, it's going well this way. He said, I'm going to be proactive. It's another series. Marcus Morris is going to start. And Ty Lue admitted that the numbers all say Tristan Thompson should play, and yet he let, and you and I talked about this weekend, he let what happened in the past affect his decisions going forward. I think that's a mistake.
No, I agree with you, and I think the thing that Ty has to understand here, and it's something that I don't know that he has fully grasped or he has fully realized, the margin for error for this team is not as significant as it used to be. Like in the past, Kyrie Irving and LeBron James can cover up mistakes of a lineup or a rotation or defensive breakdowns because they're just so brilliant that it almost didn't matter necessarily who you put out there with them. But the margin for error on this team has shrunk significantly. And this is where Ty is going to have to put his imprint on an outcome of a series. And this is where his rotations and his combinations and his ATOs, and that kind of stuff can be the difference between winning and losing a series. And there's more pressure on him than ever because of that. And I think he's been put under a microscope more than ever because of that as well. I have said, because they don't have as much talent as they used to, like, they need Ty to be a coach that can shift a series or shift a game in order to get a series. I felt like he did that in Game 7 against Indiana. I don't know why it took him as long as it did, but when he absolutely needed to win that game, he unleashed Tristan Thompson. That was a brilliant move by Ty. I thought that's part of the reason why the Cavs won Game 7. He went to George Hill, even though he was cold in the first half, didn't play in the first half, went to him in the second half. I thought that led the Cavs to a victory in Game 7. So those are the kinds of things that he has to do more consistently, especially in this series against Boston, where he is up against the guy who I think is the best coach in the NBA.
Chris Fedor is our guest. Chris, I think that Draymond Green last night should have been tossed for a second technical foul. I thought it was outrageous that he wasn't. I think he gets the special treatment, which I don't know if that's ever going to change. What do you think? I mean, do you think that he gets the special treatment, obviously, and do you think he should have been ejected?
I think, Dustin, every player with one technical gets some kind of quote-unquote special treatment.
I agree.
Because I think what referees are trained to do is use discretion. And sometimes that brings the human element into play. Like, if it was just robotic and things like that, maybe whatever reaction would cause a technical foul or something would be called in terms of a personal foul. But referees are out there to provide the human element of the game. It's an emotional game. It's the playoffs. In this case, it's the Western Conference Finals. And ejecting a guy can shift a series. Ejecting a guy can shift a game. And I don't think referees want to be responsible for that unless it's way, way, way over the line. Like, if he would have done what he did to James Harden once again to a different Houston Rockets player, then that warrants a second technical. And I think the NBA and those referees are okay with ejecting a guy because of that. But when a guy has one technical, whether it's Draymond, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, James Harden, Eric Gordon, LeBron James, they're a little bit more lenient with what they allow because it needs to be really, really bad for them to eject a guy.
Chris, do you buy that, because I don't, that Draymond, I had fans calling and saying, Draymond Green gets in the faces of refs, no other player in the NBA does it. Are you buying that?
No, I think every player in the NBA gets in the face of refs. Nowadays, you see it in high school now, you see it in college, you see it in the NBA. I think it's bad.
Yeah.
I think it's a bad look. I think it's trickled down in a negative way. But there is a lot of frustration between players and referees that has been built up over the last couple of years. And I think the other problem that happened with the NBA is, like, they always do these polls of who's the best ref in the league and who's the worst ref in the league. Over the last 2 years, like, the top five referees have either picked up different jobs, like, within the league office, or they've retired. And I think the NBA has lost too many good officials, and there aren't good enough guys to replace them, and I think that's led to a lot of frustration. But I don't think what Draymond does is more so than what other players do in the NBA in terms of being mad at the refs and voicing that displeasure. Now, some of the other stuff, like the flagrant fouls, the technical fouls, he probably does more of that than any other player in the league. But the screaming at the official thing is an epidemic. It's not a Draymond Green solo act.
Agreed. Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com. Chris, all right, if you had the power to control this, which you certainly do not, but if you did, what would you rather have tonight? The Cavs get a win, or the Cavs get a top three lottery pick?
Oh, Cavs get a top three lottery pick, for sure.
All right, I agree, and I think Dustin does too, but tell us why.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think everything with the Cavs has to be looked at from the standpoint of what could be their best route to keep LeBron James. And winning a game two against Boston, or winning an Eastern Conference Finals matchup against Boston, like, it doesn't change the realities of what this team is now dealing with in terms of complications in trying to keep LeBron, right? So, like, they win in four impressive games against Toronto, and that was fantastic, and they looked great in that particular matchup. That doesn't change the reality that this is not the team that LeBron signed up to play with. When he decided to come back in 2014, he singled out Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving was the biggest draw from a basketball standpoint that made LeBron leave Miami and come to Cleveland. He's not here anymore. So even though he's got Kevin Love and the Cavs looked impressive against Toronto and maybe they get out of the Eastern Conference Finals and get back to the NBA Finals, it doesn't change his supporting cast. It doesn't change the fact that Kevin Love's his second best option. It doesn't change the fact that there are legitimate salary cap issues that this team is going to deal with in the offseason in terms of trying to improve the roster around LeBron. LeBron knows this. His camp knows this. They're smart. It also doesn't change the fact that his relationship with Dan Gilbert is not very good. It also doesn't change the fact, in a good way, that Cleveland is home and it's an emotional tie to him more so than any other player in the history of the NBA. So the Cavs have that going for them as well. But if you have to do something to keep LeBron here and entice him to stay, like having a top three pick in this particular draft and the player that you can add that way, or the player that you can add and then maybe flip for that other star player to replace Kyrie to become the second option and allow Kevin to go to the third option, like that's a way that you can appeal to LeBron, because that shows a path towards winning and boosting his legacy. But right now, I think the Cavs are finding it hard to make a basketball argument to keep LeBron here long term, and I think he's looking for them to give him one, and a top three pick would go a long way in helping that.
You think it's going to be the ultimate difference maker?
I don't think it's going to be the ultimate difference maker. I don't know what it is that LeBron is going to lean on here when it comes to this decision, like what the thing is that's going to push him one way or the other. I don't know that he knows that right now. I don't know that his team knows that right now. I think it's all about like what he feels best. For me, every decision that he's made in his career has been about his legacy. And he has talked so much about his legacy throughout his 15 years in the NBA. It is my belief that legacy is going to hang over this decision. And the time that he chose to go to Miami, it's because he felt like it was best for his legacy. The only way that he could start closing that gap on Michael was with rings, multiple rings, learning how to be a champion. So even though there was a lot of backlash that came with it, he became the champion LeBron James, and that validated his spot in the NBA. Coming back to Cleveland was about delivering the championship for Cleveland, undoing the black mark on his resume, which was the decision. He ended the championship drought. Like, that was huge for his legacy. So I just think, based on his history, that legacy is going to hover over this decision more than location, more than relationships, or anything like that.
Last thing, Chris, Cavs win tonight?
I think they do. Yeah, I think they do. I think they can make more outside shots, the open shots that they got in game one. I think LeBron is going to have a different kind of approach. I think part of the reason why he took the approach that he did in game one is because the way that his supporting cast played in the Toronto series, and I think he thought it was really, really important for them to carry that over and maybe get them going in this particular series against Boston. It didn't work. His teammates let him down. They didn't make shots. LeBron wasn't aggressive enough, like all that different stuff. So I think he's going to take a different approach into tonight's game. But I will say this, like, we know based on watching the Cavs that there are certain teams and there are certain styles that bother them. Toronto was not. We have the benefit of hindsight now, and we could see that Toronto was not one of those teams. Boston is a lot like Indiana, except for they're better coached, they have more talent, they're better overall, they're smarter, and they're better defensively. So that's what the Cavs are up against in this particular series. And I know they don't have the high-end talent of Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, but a lot of times when you get into a seven-game series, it's about matchups. And I was told from the very beginning of this postseason that Boston would probably be the toughest matchup, and this came from people inside the Cavs organization. Boston would probably be the toughest matchup for this team because of their style. The style makes the fight. And the Cavs, the blueprint to beat them is to get physical, to make them uncomfortable, and make it a game in the 90s or the 100s where they get really, really antsy and they get really, really frustrated. Toronto let them get way too comfortable, and Boston's not going to let that happen. So the Cavs better be ready for a fight this entire series.
Sounds good. It's going to be interesting. Chris, thanks for joining us, man.
You got it, guys.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.